everyone, and welcome to an extra special episode of All Crime, No Cattle. This is the episode where we celebrate our first anniversary.
Yay! Yes! Anniversary time celebration.
That's right. So, if you are just tuning into the show and you're trying to get kind of a scope for what our show is, this is not the best place to start. This is going to be something that is super silly and off the cuff, and we're going to be having a lot of fun this episode. But this is not the typical episode of our show.
Yeah, you're right. We're going to be super weird and goofy this episode. We have a couple of true crime cases to discuss, so it'll still be Texas true crime, but it's going to go off the rails.
So today on the show, we're going to be sharing some details about the podcast, going over some of our numbers and stuff like that. We each have a cool true crime story, a little weird mini case for you that happened this year in 2018. And then we're going to be doing some listener stories, listener feedback, some questions that we have gathered from listeners and from fellow podcasters. And then at the end of the show, we're going to be giving you our blooper reel that we've compiled over pretty much the entire year. And it's going to be really weird.
Well, if you've listened to the majority of our episodes, you'll catch some little context clues for parts of the blooper reel.
That's right. So, but we have champagne to get to, first of all.
Oh, is that first? Okay. Let's just get this little thing off here. There we go. All right.
Oh, God. Don't point that towards the mixer.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to point it towards you. Is that better?
Yeah. It actually is. Woo! That scared me. Beautiful. No spillage.
Well, I was a professional, you know. All right.
All right, babe. Happy anniversary to you, Shay.
Happy anniversary to you, Aaron.
Whole year of podcasting. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
It's very crazy. And what's also kind of weird is our actual marriage anniversary is in a couple days.
Oh, yeah.
It is. 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm already getting that 7-year itch, guys. Idris Elba. Who are the other boys I like?
Oh, you like?
You know who you are. Oh, Tom Hardy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You like Mad Max.
Coming for ya. But you're fine for now.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. No, man, I can't believe we did it. I mean, when we started this little show, we did not expect to get to this point.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of our good stats that we have going. So we just hit about 600,000 downloads.
That's correct.
Thank you to each and every one of you that tried out our show and are liking it. We really appreciate our listeners so much. So thank you, all of you, so much. It really warms the cockles of our cold gray hearts. 1 year, we had 41 episodes. So those are regular episodes that doesn't count like this episode, for example, or some of the extra other episodes like we had for some of the Texas meetups and those interviews that we did. So all total probably what, like 45?
44, I believe.
44 in a year, not bad. Shows you that we didn't take really that much time off at all this year. And I think that my crow's feet tell that story and my graying hair.
Oh, do you think you've gained more from the podcast? I haven't gotten any extra white hairs in my beard, I don't think.
Gained weight.
Yeah, maybe a loop in the belt, because all we do is sit now at the desk and do research and podcast and edit.
That's all we do. All right, so we mentioned last episode that we are going on a break until probably mid-January or something. We will still be working on the show.
That's correct.
So unfortunately, it's not really a proper break like we'd like.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to the Bahamas.
Oh my God, I wish. But we wanted to share with you guys some of the things that we're going to be working on for next year. So, for example, we are going to be working on a website for the show. And that website will include links to all of our citations, our research that we use for each case, and it will include links to purchase those materials. So, for example, a lot of times we'll have a book or something that we've read, and we'll tell you, hey, you can go to Amazon and you can purchase this book. Well, with this new website, all you have to do is visit our website, go to that episode, and you'll be able to click on the link and go and access that directly. So it'll be a lot easier for you guys to get a hold of our research, and you're more than able to fact check us or find out more information about cases that you're really interested in. It's just our way of being more transparent and really giving props to those sources that really did a lot of the investigatory legwork.
That's, yeah.
And we're just sort of compiling all those sources together into one kind of cohesive unit. So that's something that we're really excited about. We hope you guys like it as well.
Yeah, we're standing on the shoulders of journalistic giants a lot of times in these cases.
That's right. And I think that's true of pretty much, well, I won't say all podcasts, because obviously there are a lot of investigatory podcasts out there that are fantastic. But we are not necessarily one of those.
Although, we have day jobs. So
true. But we are working on cases in which we are going to be doing some of that investigation.
Yep.
As well. And that's another little hint at at what's to come. We're not ready to really give you more than that. But yeah, there are going to be some bigger things coming up in our future as well.
That's right. We actually have contacted a retired homicide detective who is currently working a case for us. So we have more to come on that.
That's right. And it's a case very close to you.
It is very close to my heart. And my formative years.
Yeah, I'm really excited about getting into that because it's a case that not many people know about. We're going to be really excited to bring that to you. Another thing that I want to tease, well, I'm not going to tease it because I'm just going to tell you what's going on. So, you know, our dear, dear Texas Ranger, Lisa L., we hung out with her at that Dallas Stars game recently, and I gave her a list of several different options for my next Lone Star Lunatics series. And I allowed her to pick which one that she wanted me to do. And she picked, drum roll please. Lisa picked Charles Albright, the Texas eyeball killer. So that is going to be my next Lone Star Lunatic. It's not necessarily going to be the opening episode of next year. I'm not sure how long it's going to take me to compile all of that information about that case. But it will be my next major case.
So, it's a really interesting one. I think he's been done a few times, but I think I'm really excited to see what you can bring to the case.
It's a hefty case. It's obviously a very serious case as well. So I'm excited to get really into the details because it's not a case that I know too much about right off the bat. I mean, I know, you know, the basics like everybody does, but I'm excited to really get into it. So that's going to be coming up hopefully within the next few months. So thank you, Lisa, for picking that episode for us.
Yes, thank you, Lisa L.
That champagne's good.
It is good, isn't it?
Okay, I think that's all of our teases and everything. Are you ready to get to our mini cases, Shay?
Oh, sure.
All right, would you like me to go first?
That's what I was going to ask you.
I'll go first if you want me to, since you had the last episode. All right, well, this is a bit of a weird case. Now, we've covered lots of robberies, especially bank robberies, so people stealing money, people stealing guns, people stealing things that are obvious and worth a lot of money so they can resell it or whatever.
Yeah, we've been on a real robbery kick lately.
We really have. And this is another robbery case, but there's a twist to it in which the thing being stolen is not something that you would ever expect. What's the oddest thing you ever heard being stolen? Besides the fajita meat, if you all listened to our last Patreon episode.
That's true. We did have someone who stole a bunch of fajita meat in the Patreon episode. Trash? It would be weird for me, like, if you just went to, like, a landfill and you loaded up a bunch of random trash.
Okay, yeah, that's weird. You're not in the right ballpark, though. Okay. Let me just go ahead and tell you what this person stole. He stole a shark.
A shark?
Yes. So things got a little shaky for the San Antonio Aquarium in July of this year.
Oh, okay. I was like, first of all, how do you even steal a shark? Like, is there just a place, like a shark warehouse or a shark
dealer? An aquarium is basically a shark warehouse.
That's a good point.
So three mysterious kidnappers stole a shark from its tank at the San Antonio Aquarium. The tank was one of those open touch pools where visitors are allowed to, like, stick their hands in, touch the marine animals, that one of those places.
How do you have a shark in there then?
Well, this was a very small shark. She's about 16 inches long, so about a foot and a half. She was a horn shark named Miss Helen.
That's a weird name for a shark, especially if it's in a touching area for children to touch the sea animal. Horn shark doesn't seem like it should be in the...
It's just like one of those little, those little sharks.
Well, I don't know sharks. I'm not a shark dude.
So these three kidnappers were spotted on surveillance cameras hanging around the tank. So they basically stood around this tank for about an hour trying to find their opportunity to steal Miss Helen.
Okay.
So on the surveillance footage, a man nonchalantly walks up to the tank. He has a net in his hands. He grabbed up the little shark and he plopped her into a bucket hidden in a baby stroller. And then they all three left the aquarium.
Oh, wow. That's elaborate. So he already had a baby stroller with a bucket of water in it ready to go.
Yes. And we're going to see that this whole thing, this whole dastardly plot was planned. So like I mentioned, the three were caught on surveillance footage in the act of kidnapping Miss Helen while they were inside the aquarium. Well, there were also cameras outside the aquarium that caught a good look at the getaway vehicle along with its license plate. Oh. Because of course they did. So these images were then blasted all over the news, all over social media, and people started calling in, giving information about who they thought these people were, and the manhunt for the three kidnappers began. When workers at the aquarium were shown the footage, they were shocked because they recognized the man who stole Miss Helen. Just the month before, he had posed as an employee of the aquarium's salt supplier. So basically he came in and said, "I'm an employee for your salt supplier. We had a bad batch of salt that we sold to you guys. I need to go in and I need you to give me a tour of your facility. I need to look and check and see what's going on in all of your back rooms, all of your storage rooms." And so he got like basically a full tour of the back rooms of the San Antonio Aquarium. And that led him to plan this kidnapping.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
So what you're this seems like, okay, you got three people, a getaway car, you got a baby carriage with a bucket of prepared water in it. This shark must be worth a lot of money.
It was only worth $2,000.
Wow. Oh,
like, I guess on the black shark market. But I don't know. I guess this is a shark that you could buy if you had your home aquarium. We're going to get into that a little bit more.
And it just seems like a lot of work.
And you mentioned that the bucket was prepared water. It was not. So this is the area where they really screwed up. The authorities learned from the aquarium that the bucket the kidnappers had used to transport the shark was owned by the aquarium. So they were able to go into those back rooms. Do you remember how he had that tour of the facility? So he knew that there were back rooms back there with buckets that he could take to steal Miss Helen. Because you're not going to be able to go into the aquarium with your own bucket, right?
Oh, that's a good point.
They stole this bucket from the back room. It happened that there was a bleach solution in that bucket. It's used to like clean equipment and stuff like that.
Oh, no.
Well, they poured this bleach solution into the filtration system of the aquarium in order to then dump out the liquid that was in there and then fill the bucket with liquid from the tank. That way that they can steal the shark in that water. So what they did, and they probably didn't realize what they were doing. They probably just thought it was water, or maybe they just didn't care. Not sure. But that bleach could have killed a ton of the aquarium's animals. If it wasn't for the fast action of the aquarium employees, they were able to like dump other kind of chemical solutions in there or whatever they were able to do to counteract the bleach before it was able to do damage. Because it could have killed like hundreds of animals in the aquarium.
Jeez, that's terrible.
It really was terrible. So it didn't take long to track the kidnappers down, of course. We have the main kidnapper, who is the one who actually physically stole the shark. And then there was, like, I guess a friend of his, and then a woman who was his neighbor. These two got tied up in this plot somehow.
Weird. My earlier statement was this sounded really planned out, and then we found out that the shark wasn't worth a whole lot. And then you told us that it wasn't actually very well planned out, and there were quite a few hiccups in this plan.
I mean, it was planned out, but I mean,
not
well, it looks like. It didn't take long to track the kidnapper down from the surveillance footage. And inside his home, authorities found a huge aquarium filled with all sorts of sea creatures, including Miss Helen.
Oh.
So this is a guy who has like one of those huge aquariums filled with all sorts of junk in there. That's what he had at his home. The man claimed he had purchased the horn shark fair and square and even showed a receipt of this purchase, except the receipt, according to authorities, was clearly fake.
Oh, okay. They were able to tell that quick. Okay.
Yeah, it was like pen on notebook paper or something. I don't know. They don't describe how it was faked, but apparently it was like a very obvious attempt to fake a receipt.
Okay.
So Miss Helen was transported back to the aquarium where she was quarantined. She underwent treatments to make sure it was healthy. She didn't have any parasites or, you know, wasn't sick or anything like that. And she was able to be put back in her little home with all of the other animals. And she was perfectly fine, which they said was actually kind of surprising because it's not easy to take care of a shark. And then she went into that bucket. She was transported in a car. Exactly. So they were very worried about her, but she was perfectly fine. They said she was very healthy. Aquarium employee Jamie Shank told the New York Times, quote, "She's a tough little horn shark. I'll tell you that. I'm really proud of her."
Yeah. You should be, Miss Helen. You're a hardy shark.
That's right. The kidnapper, well, he claimed that he stole Miss Helen for her own good because he'd heard that the aquarium had kept its animals in poor condition, and he was only trying to help her. He called himself an activist.
Oh.
And basically one of the things that he said was one of his sharks had apparently died recently, and he was getting her as a replacement. That's what he told the authorities before he later came on with a statement of, oh, I'm an activist. I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
So he was charged with felony theft. I haven't seen any updates about the man and the woman who helped him in this great kidnapping, but the police chief did state that they could also face charges as well.
Good.
So there you go. That's the big horn shark heist of the century.
Horn shark heist of Helen. That's a tongue twister right there.
Yeah. Happening right here in San Antonio, Texas, July 2018. You heard it here first. Or maybe you didn't because it was kind of a big news story. But very, very strange.
It is weird. And it's also weird that you would just go through all of that just to steal a shark to replace your dead shark.
Yeah.
I mean, just buy another shark, right?
Well, I guess he didn't have $2,000 or he didn't want to spend $2,000. Mm-hmm.
It's just weird.
Well, I mean, he had this perfect plan of putting the shark in a bucket and a baby stroller. I mean, what could go wrong?
What a weird story. A shark theft in San Antonio.
Yep.
Something you don't hear about. It'd be like if you told me there was a sloth stealing ring in Dallas because they have sloths at their aquarium.
Well, I got to tell you what, I'd steal a sloth.
They are cute. I've thought about getting a sloth tattoo, you guys.
I love sloths.
I've been thinking about it. All right, hit us up on social media if I should get a sloth tattoo. I mean, they live the same life I do. We're both stinky, moldy, slow. We're not very active, but we're real cute, though. And everybody loves us. You know it's true. Well, moving on to my story, I have a much more festive story.
Oh.
Yeah. So my story involves the holidays here in our town, Fort Worth, a.k.a. Funky Town. Every year we have this large tree lighting ceremony downtown in Sundance Square. This is something that's typically done in conjunction with a large parade of lights where we have all these lighted floats for the holidays right after Thanksgiving. And it's a big thing for Fort Worth. And people try and make it down there at some point every now and then and go and visit the tree and see the lights and get a little bit of your Christmas festive spirit going on. In this particular case, something went awry on a weekend, this past weekend, when someone did something nefarious to the Christmas tree. What do you think it was, Aaron? What do you think they did to that poor Christmas tree? Which is 56 feet tall and is a blue spruce, by the way.
Oh, blue spruce. That's a nice tree.
It is a nice tree.
They tried to knock it over.
Oh, okay. No. They didn't try and knock it over, but you're on the right track because they did try and destroy it somehow. What happened was it was a typical holiday weekend, downtown Fort Worth. You got your holiday music. You got the water fountains that are all programmed and organized that are going off down there. The Christmas lights, the courthouse downtown is lit up. And then all of a sudden, a person in a hoodie just emerges from the crowd and walks right up next to the tree where they have this fenced off area that goes, you know, pretty close to the perimeter of it. But it's mainly there to keep people from going up and touching the tree. This lone person in a black hoodie standing up there all by themselves, and all of a sudden there's fire in their hand. And then the fire is down on the ground near the tree. Well, after this fire gets spontaneously made near the base of this tree, the person in the hood just runs off through the crowd as everyone's freaking out and kind of scattering. Well, lucky for us, Fort Worth police were on the scene as general security for the holidays in Sundance Square, and there were a bunch of spectators and people that were just hanging out there enjoying the festivities who were like, that person right there in the hood, they tried to burn the tree down as they're running away through the crowd. She gets apprehended. It's a lady. Luckily, some of the other people, the passersby and holiday goers, were able to put the fire out before the entire tree caught on fire. So they not only saved the giant 56-foot blue spruce, but they probably saved this whole tree, which is dry. And if you've ever burned an evergreen tree, it gets explosive and it burns like really quickly. It could have turned into a terrible calamity based on what some of the representatives from the Fort Worth police said. The tree could have toppled over. It could have crashed on some of the spectators. It could have gotten real bad real quick. Apparently what happened, according to Kaylee Schumann and Sarah Creighton, who were some friends who were there, who were hanging out, taking pictures, they saw a woman next to them in a hoodie just pull out some lighter fluid, start spraying it on the ground near the tree while they were trying to take selfies and video. Later, Kylie Schumann posted this all to Facebook, and it's in the Fox News article that I use that I'll post. It's kind of eerie. Like, all of a sudden, they're having a good time, hanging out, and then there's this lady spraying lighter fluid and then fire. And she lights some pieces of paper that she pulls out of the hoodie on fire, throws it into this pool of accelerant that she's sprayed, and is hoping to light the tree up.
Man, that's crazy.
I don't understand. It's just weird that someone would try and destroy a giant Christmas tree that everyone's really enjoying.
So what do we know about why this person did this?
Well, what the Fort Worth police said was that the woman will not be facing criminal charges at this point because there are apparently mental health concerns that are involved in the case.
Oh, okay.
They immediately took her to a detention facility that's prepared to do mental evaluations, and that she's going through a series of mental examinations. And there are some clear signs that there were mental issues involved. Sergeant Chris Britt from the Fort Worth Police said, quote, "You want to really differentiate between a criminal act and someone having some other sort of health issues. And that's what we're doing in this case." Luckily for everyone who was there that night, we had someone who wasn't able to harm anyone else and destroy the holiday spirit. And the tree didn't get burned up and nobody was hurt.
Yeah, and hopefully this lady gets the help that she needs.
Exactly.
Maybe this was, I mean, it's silver lining, of course. Uh-huh. We try to find the silver linings, at least, you know, maybe then she can get the help that she needs, and because obviously she's unwell.
Yeah, it seems like the best case conclusion we could have
yeah.
for this. Because a lot of things could have gone wrong.
Sounds like it.
56-foot tall blue spruce, that's a big tree.
Yeah, that's crazy because I haven't heard about this story. And it happened last week in our town. You'd think this would be a lot bigger news story than it was.
Yeah, apparently it was just an almost tragedy.
All right, well, thank you for that news story from right here in Fort Worth, Texas. Pretty good one.
Yeah, and I enjoyed your shark story.
Thank you.
Hey, ACNC Posse, the holidays are upon us, and you know what that means. You're going to need to get that overgrown mop on your head looking good for all those family pictures and holiday selfies. If you're in the DFW area and require the services of a professional barber, do yourself a favor and head over to Aaron's on 7th Gentleman's Barbershop. When I go into Aaron's on 7th, I'm greeted with a cold beverage and I get to relax in the nice waiting room with cozy seating and TVs. Once I'm in the barber chair, I know I'm in good hands because they can do all types of men's hairstyles. If I'm feeling like I want to go the extra mile, I might get the old beard trimmed. You gotta keep that beard looking good, guys. Nobody likes a wild or untamed beard. But hey, maybe you're a clean-shaven sort of fella? Well, they offer a hot towel shave treatment, and they also can shave your whole head and give you that sweet Bruce Willis or Dwayne The Rock Johnson look. When I leave the shop, my hair is always looking spectacular, thanks to the quality line of gels, pomades, and other men's hair products that Aaron's on 7th offers. So if you're looking for a great place for all your barbering needs in the DFW area, Aaron's on 7th is the place to go. You can find them online at aaronson7th.com. That's aaronson7th.com. Or on their Facebook page. And the next time you stop in to the official barbershop of All Crime No Cattle, be sure to tell them who sent you. Now back to the show. So what do we got next?
Well, next, we have got some listener feedback that I wanted to read to you. This came from our Facebook message. The listener wants to remain anonymous, so we won't be sharing this person's name. but I think this person had some interesting details, some extra information on our episode Strip Clubs and Hired Guns, which was just a few episodes ago. So let me read what this person has to say. Hey, Shay. Hi, Aaron. So first of all, love your show. Secondly, if for some reason this gets brought up, I'd appreciate you not using my full name. Well, you're welcome, because we're not doing that.
Yeah.
So I listened to the episode today about Flashdancer, and while I cannot attest to what kind of person the owner was, I can tell you that Flash never had a great rep for being a clean club. I never worked there, but I did work at Legends down the street, which is a BYOB nude bar. I can attest that the city of Arlington was constantly in our club trying to catch wrongdoers. Side note, none of our girls ever got arrested or ticketed because we were a clean club. We did have a few guys that got arrested for assaulting girls. Just because we're willing to show it off doesn't give you the right to touch it. Amen.
Yeah, that is right.
Anyway, Legends was one of the clubs that went bankrupt trying to fight the city. It's a shame, too, we followed the rules. We had to dance on tabletops. Nobody touched us. I once had a guy thrown out for grabbing my boot. Now, I'm not going to say that everything was perfect. There were drugs in the clubs. You just had to be smart enough to stay away from them. There were rumors about mafia connections, but I never saw anything myself. As far as the sexual contact allegations, every single girl I knew at that club was a good girl. If someone came into our club and was being dirty, i.e. touching, etc., we would run them off. None of us wanted that in our club. Why compete with that when we don't have to? Most of us were single moms trying to get ahead in life or take care of our kids. Me personally, it paid for me to get a degree and got me out of an abusive relationship. I made some of my best friends there. I left the industry when Legends closed in 2003, and occasionally I still miss it. Sorry, got off track. Yes, APD was outrageous. They would sit at the gas station next door and pull people over. They would come in the club and scowl because they couldn't find anything to get us in trouble for. And Aaron, yes, it was very insulting to be grouped into the worst category just because I was a stripper. Amazingly enough, we weren't all disease-ridden whores. Anyway, I enjoyed the episode. Keep up the good work, y'all. So thank you very much, our anonymous person, for giving us those details. I thought it was interesting because, you know, this person had a similar kind of experience in the Arlington strip club area in that same time frame. And even though she worked at a club that, you know, wasn't the one that was in that episode, Flashdancer, but she worked at one that was a similar time period in the same city, pretty close, I think, as far as just like distance from each other goes.
Oh, yeah.
She also said that she could testify that the Arlington Police Department and maybe the Arlington City kind of overstepped their bounds.
Yeah.
In coming in and kind of trying to find people who were doing bad things and trying to really regulate as much as possible. And I thought that was interesting to get information back from somebody who can kind of talk about the culture that a lot of those strip clubs in Arlington had and how she felt that their club was even targeted by the city of Arlington, even though theirs was a good club. And so that kind of goes along with a lot of the things that we talked about in that episode, which is, did Arlington, the city of Arlington, overstepped their bounds in kind of trying to control, regulate, and possibly close all of these strip clubs. It really sounds like maybe that was the case, at least from some things that we're hearing about. Of course, that being said, don't try to kill the mayor.
That's right.
Not going to help you.
That's right. But it is, it's always good to have someone come in with some interesting other details that go on to corroborate the rest of the story that we had put forth in that episode. It gives you a little bit of extra details and really helps you kind of see that this is what was going on. And this is exactly what we're talking about.
And so, yeah, Legends ended up closing pretty much from the same things that we were talking about. You know, the city really just coming down hard on strip clubs and other adult entertainment venues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of interesting. So thank you very much for your feedback.
Yeah, thank you for writing us. We appreciate you coming forward and sharing and elaborating on the rest of the story. And that's really great to hear, and I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Okay, on the next section of this anniversary spectacular, which, hey, let's cheers again. our next segment is going to be some of the jokes that people sent in. People like to send us cow jokes. You ready for some good cow jokes, Aaron?
I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Who doesn't like cows? Cows are cute, aren't they?
Cows really are cute.
Yeah.
I feel bad for eating them.
Well, here's your first one. This one came to us from Cherie N, who responded to one of our threads about the anniversary episode on Facebook. She says, why do cows have hooves instead of feet?
So I don't know. Why don't we even try to come up with an answer?
Well, you're the bone person. You should know why they have hooves instead of feet, right? Like a scientific version of the answer.
I'm not going to get into it.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, future Patreon episode. Well, it's because they lactose. You know, they lactose. I appreciate this joke because I am lactose intolerant. I'm not a mutant like you, Aaron, who can just imbibe the fresh milk of the teat.
Just means I'm more highly evolved.
Yeah, well, my people, they weren't weak, and they didn't need to suckle on the milk of the teat of the animal.
Oh, okay, fellow anthropologists, you think that societies and cultures that focus on milk production
pastoralism,
are weak, huh?
No, I don't think that. That was just a joke to go along with the cow joke. But if you want to hear further debates like this, we could mock one up for a Patreon episode. Oh, God,
yeah, it would be fascinating.
All right, next one. This one comes from Amanda V, and she says, what do you call a cow with a twitch? Well, if you have a twitch, then you're a little shaky, maybe, or...
Milkshake?
Oh, that's a good answer.
Oh.
But it's not the right answer.
Oh, come on, that was great.
Yeah, milkshake. That would have been a good extra joke. No, this one is beef jerky, because they're jerky.
Oh my God, I love me some beef jerky.
Yeah, what's the one we like to get when we go to Winco?
Old Trapper.
Old Trapper.
It's delicious.
Yep.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Now I want some beef jerky. Mmm.
Hold on, let me double check.
Nom, nom, nom.
That might be it on cow jokes.
All right, let's get into some listener questions. Well, Brittany Earls from Facebook, they asked, is there a case you're holding back on either for more information or because you want it to be perfect?
Yes, we kind of alluded to this earlier. I myself am working on my own personal hometown murder right now with our extra researcher, the detective, and that's going to be awesome. I wish I could give you some hints, but I really can't. Maybe if you're a patron and you hit me up on the DMs, I'll give you a little more hints. I don't know, but it's going to be great. I can tell you that it's a multiple homicide situation. It's very historic for our county. Death row is involved. Wrongful conviction possibilities are involved. The evidence is suspect, and it's going to be a big debate. I'll tell you that. What about you, Aaron?
Typically from a week-to-week basis, usually if there's a case that we've been working on and if you've noticed that the episode is a few days late, typically it's because we're like, oh man, we need more extra time and we'd rather work on an episode, perfect it, get the research where it needs to be before we actually release that episode. So like I said, on a week-to-week basis, that's what we do. I guess we kind of hold back on release dates because of that reason, because we want to produce an episode that we're proud of as opposed to, you know, getting something out on time. Who cares about being on time? As a forever procrastinator and also late person, doesn't bother me.
Well, and
that's what we do.
As a fan of true crime, the shows that I listen to, I would much rather it be a few days late and be really good and well done than just rush it and it not be a very good episode.
Yeah.
So that was a great question. Thank you for putting that forward.
All right. The next one also comes from Facebook, and this is from Megan Dilworth, who says, how did the two of you meet?
Oh, this is a question that many people have had. Have we not talked about this on the show?
No, I don't think so. We met at UTA. So both of us were going to school at UTA.
And what
both
is
of
UTA?
Us, oh, University of Texas at Arlington. Sorry, I forgot that there are people who are not from this immediate area. So we were both going to college. We were both anthropology majors. And we actually didn't know each other at all.
No,
so
we didn't.
Something that... just to get a glimpse of us in real life, Shay is this very gregarious, like, I'm everybody's friend. I'm really happy and outgoing and like everybody loves me. And I'm very cool with like nobody ever talking to me and being a loner.
Yep.
And that's how we never knew each other.
Yeah.
Because it's an anthropology program, very small.
It is a very tiny program. I'm very extroverted. You're very introverted and private.
Yeah.
I kind of knew everybody in the program, but I didn't know.
But not me.
But I didn't know you.
And we both had this opportunity that was kind of given to a lot of the anthropology students, which was to go on a study abroad trip with the Honors College to Greece. Yep. And I have had a lifelong fascination and love for Greece and Greek mythology, especially. So I jumped at that chance, and so did Shay, because yep. Who doesn't want to go travel and explore?
Sure. And we both had kind of a focus on old world archaeology. So yes. it was yeah, right up our alley. Yeah.
That's actually how we met, was in orientation for going on the study abroad trip to Greece. I was with my mom. My mom came with me to the orientation because I was like 20 years old and, you know, she was paying for it and she wanted to come. She was excited for me. It was my first time ever leaving the country. And you were there. My mom sat next to you. I sat, you know, next to my mom. You and my mom started chatting.
Oh, you.
And I was like, who the hell is this guy?
your mom and I have always gotten along from the get-go.
She loves you.
Yeah, I love your mom. I thought she was a student that was coming along on the trip. You know, maybe someone, you know, continuing education, maybe doing their master's or PhD. And no, it turns out that was your mom.
Yeah, that's my mom. And you were like, oh, who's this lady?
I was interested in
just
you.
To me, not my mom.
Yeah, no, I was interested in you, not your mom. Yeah.
And I was not interested because I'm just generally not interested.
What does that mean? I'm just generally not interested.
I'm not somebody who's excited about meeting new people. Let's
okay,
be honest.
That's fair. But I had.
Although I am a people person.
Yeah.
I'm just weird. I'm just a weird person. Can we just say that?
Sure.
But yeah, that's how we met.
But then we had the Greece class that was kind of a preamble to going on the Greece trip.
Yeah, because we were in a class together. We sat on opposite mm-hmm. sides of the room.
And that's when I decided I was going to try and talk to you and get to know you a little better because I knew you were going to go on the trip with us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I walked up to Erin and I said, oh, hey, nice shirt, because I like the band that she was wearing, a Perfect Circle shirt. And I thought that was cool. And you thought that was a really lame conversation starter.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I didn't
get it. But hey, joke's on you, because it worked.
So yeah, that's how we met, study abroad trip to Greece. So we got to know each other in the land of Greece, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful place. Highly suggest you go.
Great food, great people. Great archaeology.
That's right.
Next up, we have our buddy Mike from Dark Poutine, world famous Dark Poutine, the Canadian podcast, who recorded a little message for us. So let's listen to that.
Well, will you look at that? It's anniversary time for All Crime No Cattle. This is Mike from the Dark Poutine podcast up here in Canada. I just wanted to wish Shay, Erin, and all your listeners a happy anniversary of your fantastic show, and thank you for being so kind to me and dragging me around your city and showing me your wonderful state. We had a great time at the 6th floor Book Depository Museum, and then we went to a hockey game after a meetup with some fans. I couldn't ask for better hosts. You folks are awesome. Every bit of success that you're having, you deserve. Keep it up, and here's to another 10 years. Geez, do you have that in you? Holy smokes, I don't know if I do.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike, for that message. Very sweet. That we love nice. Mike so much, and they have been doing such amazing things recently. They got a huge bump from My Favorite Murder when they mm-hmm. were mentioned on their Live Vancouver episode. And so they've been just
killing it.
Killing it.
And we had such a great time with him when he was here in Dallas. We got to do so much fun things with him. Oh, we had such a great time. We got fat on really good Texas food. And we plan to do the same thing. We're going to try and make it up to Canada at some point and visit yes. up there.
Please. I'm excited about that. But yeah, super congrats to Dark Poutine and everything yep. that they're doing. They're like one of the top podcasts in all of Canada right now.
And can we also talk about how, since we've been featured on Dark Poutine and Dark Poutine was mentioned by My Favorite Murder, we have shot up the Canadian podcasting charts. At one point, we were in the top 50 history podcasts for all of Canada.
Yeah, I know. So we've kind of gotten like mm-hmm. the ripple effect, yep. which is nice.
That's right. We're actually higher rated in Canada right now than we are in the United States for history.
Well, thank you, Canadians. If yeah. you're still listening, hopefully you yeah, are.
Hopefully you haven't tuned out by now. Well, our friend Courtney, who hosts the podcast Cult of Domesticity, She says, first, can we be best friends? Sure, why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also she wants to know, what cases are you terrified to cover? We have a lot of terrifying cases here in Texas. Cases that I'm terrified of covering, I think for a different reason, I'm terrified to try and attempt to cover the JFK assassination because it is such a giant monster of a case and there's so many details and there's so much that's been put out about it.
I didn't know you were ever considering actually covering that case.
I mean, I wasn't at first, but then we went to the Sixth Floor Museum mm-hmm. with Mike from Dark Poutine. But once we went to that museum, I was like, man, this would be really cool to just give a deep perspective.
There's a lot of interesting forensics.
There is.
And ballistics and stuff.
Audio science.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would agree with you. That would be really a scary thing to try to cover.
Just thinking about the amount of work that would go into that is terrifying.
Yeah.
What about you?
I don't feel like I'm necessarily scared of any case. I guess it would be more feeling daunted by the amount of work some of the cases will be. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are cases that we're going to talk about later in some of the other questions, so I won't mention them specifically here. But yeah, there are just, you know, those cases that are big. They're so well known and so many people have such a strong opinion about them that it's hard to conceptualize how are you going to cover a case that there are so many people out there who have very strong opinions.
And we always ask ourselves that question. What will we bring to this case if we cover it?
Yeah. So that's another issue is that obviously there are a lot of cases also that have been covered so well by so many other people that it's like, is there something else we're going to be able to bring to this case? Some new research or anything like that? So those are the kind of cases that we, you know, feel a little bit nervous about or whatever. But most cases, I think, are on the docket as far as, I mean, there's cases that are like maybe more gruesome or whatever, we would dial back on talking about those details, yeah. Which we've done before in the past.
We also try and spread those kind of gruesome, horrible cases out. We don't want to do a whole run of those and just throw that at you guys.
So Thrasher from Lords of Death. Lords of Death is a new podcast that just came out recently. Really good, super interesting podcast. We definitely highly recommend you go listen to that.
Very popular right now. Just racing up the charts.
Oh, definitely. He said, AC&C has covered several intense cases. The Laredo axe murders comes to mind. Are there any cases that have kept you up at night? If so, which case and why?
Well, first of all, thanks for writing in, Thrasher. We appreciate you being a part of this. And great question. I would say the series we did on Robert Ben Rhodes keeps me up a lot. And I think about that one a lot just because we still don't have a lot of answers to missing women on highways in Texas that went missing during that time period.
And certainly not just in Texas, because we know he moved around the country.
All over the country.
Yeah.
But that's a big problem here in Texas and in the United States is our missing women who we still don't have answers to those cases. A lot of them were sex workers, transient, you know, working at truck stops or just hitchhikers. And it's sad. It's really sad. And I want closure for all of those cases and all those missing women. And that one definitely always keeps me thinking about what else did we not catch with Robert Ben Rhodes, the truck stop killer, to be clear.
No, I would definitely agree with you on that. And we did it really early on in our podcasting career. I'm not sure if that was the greatest choice that we made. But yeah, that was really, really hard. We were, I think, kind of traumatized by the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. We had to take a week off afterwards to reset. Yeah. It was our first Lone Star Lunatic series.
Yeah, definitely a hard one for sure. Thrasher also asks, the chemistry between the hosts is on point. Are there any tips or advice you could give to up-and-coming podcasts with two hosts to improve the synergy during conversation segments?
How do you improve synergy in a podcast, Aaron?
You know, honestly, I don't really know. A lot of it is just we're best friends. We've known each other for 12 years, right? Something like that. Pretty much our entire adult lives have been spent with each other. So we're really close. We kind of feed off of each other's energies and everything. So I guess one thing would be maybe to do a podcast. If you're going to be choosing to do a conversational podcast, do it with somebody who you have a lot of respect for, who you are interested in. and who you both can kind of have a conversation that you feel really energized by and excited about.
Yes. It helps when you're having a conversation to be a good listener and a good presenter at the same time. So you got to have good points and good content, but you also have to be able to listen to the other person and be an attentive listener. So I would say those things.
Yeah, very good.
Our BPFFs, our best podcasting friends for life. Gone Cold, they wrote in and they said, is there a case that both of you as a couple share a passion for, i.e. discuss more frequently than any other?
Yes. And I feel like I can answer this question without even talking to you about it. That's Darlie Routier.
Oh, man. Yes. D.R. Routier.
Yeah. That case is crazy.
Interesting case. And that's one we've been holding on to because we really want to do it right.
That's definitely one of those cases that we're intimidated by because there's so much information. So many people think she's innocent. So many people think she's guilty. Won't tell you what I feel. But I do feel strongly about what I feel about it.
What I will say about it is I do think that the forensics will speak for itself.
Yeah. We're both on the same page about it. That's the case. We are definitely planning to cover her. I'm not even sure, honestly, with our schedule, how we're ever going to be able to put it out, though, because it's so much information. And we really want to do that case right because it's one of the cases that I think we're both mutually super interested in.
Very passionate about, yes.
It's going to be hard. I wish that we were only doing podcasting for like 3 months and then we can get to a point where we can do our regular episodes and also be researching this case. Just because, I mean, that's almost kind of what you need to do. So yep. We do plan on covering it at some point. That is like kind of our number one case in Texas that we talk about a lot.
Well, our friend Scott from Frozen Truth, he wrote in and he asked, I would be curious what your most impactful episodes have been. So I don't know if he means downloads or like what most people have written in about and had the most questions about. But I think just from being the person on the show who kind of lurks around on Reddit and figures out who's talking about our show, we've had a lot of feedback on Reddit about the Lisa Renee case.
See, I took that in a different way because I thought impactful, like something that just impacted us personally.
Oh.
And my answer was also going to be the Lisa Renee case.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because, I mean, if you listen to that episode, it was the most just tragic thing that you've ever heard. I still get upset about it when I think about it. You know, that's the case where I started crying on the episode and Shay left it in for whatever reason.
I sure did.
Yeah, it still affects me when I think about it. That it's just one of the saddest things I've ever heard. So definitely Lisa Renee. We've talked about the truck stop killer, of course, Robert Ben Rhodes, especially when it comes to Regina Walters, his 14-year-old victim. Yeah, so those are probably, I think, the two cases that have stuck with us the longest. And of course, I mean, we've done a lot of cases that are really serious and really sad. But I think those two have been the worst as far as just kind of having to deal with it emotionally and then talking about it on a podcast. Sarah from the podcast Good Nightmare asks, if you had the means to make either a television series or a book series based on your podcast, which would you choose and what would it look like?
I would probably want to do a television series, but I bet you would want to do a book.
Yeah.
Because you're the writer and I'm very charismatic.
And you're the personality.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I don't know what they would look like, but I'm happy to let a producer in to work with me and tell me what to do. And I'll be able to dish it out, baby.
Yeah. And a book would pretty much look like what we do for the podcast anyway. I mean, we essentially write a research paper and then present it on the show. So, I mean, throw that into a book format and you got it. You're made. Come on, Penguin Publishers. What are you doing?
Penguin Publishers.
Chris from Killer Jobs, the podcast. Very good. Check it out. He says, who was your favorite or most interesting serial killer?
I would say the Broomstick Killer, which was a huge part of our multi-series that you and I partnered up with when we did the Texas judicial system.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Okay. Well, I'm not keeping myself contained to Texas when I talk about my answer to this question.
Oh, okay.
Being the person who has studied serial killers since she was like 15. I'm going to say I'm a real basic biatch when it comes to serial killers. The serial killer I am genuinely most interested in is Ted Bundy. I am absolutely fascinated by Ted Bundy. I think a lot of people are as well. The charisma, the psychopathy of somebody who can be this very charismatic, interesting, normal human being on one side, but in reality be this absolute monster. It's always fascinating. And, you know, add to that the prison escapes, the different parts of his, you know, serial killer career where he basically becomes a rampage killer at the end. You know, his friendship with Anne Rule, who is a crime writer before she even realizes that Ted Bundy was her friend. I mean, all of these aspects of Ted Bundy as sort of a figure of true crime, I think is really interesting. Of course, to be clear, whenever I talk about a favorite serial killer, it's always in the terms of what made that person who they were. I'm certainly not somebody who is a fangirl of Ted Bundy or any serial killer, because they're all awful human beings, as we talk about all the time. They're all disgusting monsters who I hate. Like, I physically hate them on so many levels.
Yeah, I totally get that, too. Ted Bundy's really interesting. Mine, as I mentioned on A Killer Jobs, recommendation was BTK. And I spoke to that in that episode.
Yeah.
Like, when you talk about serial killers outside of Texas, I'm fascinated with him because he was so meticulous. He was very prepared and planned. He was very much a process killer, and he needed a particular process.
It's that this man had a family, and he had a wife and kids. Yeah. He had a job. I mean, he's just like, on the one hand, just this perfectly normal person who is capable of such unbelievable evil.
But then he was a church leader. You know, and it's the duality. I think both in the Ted Bundy answer that you gave and the BTK answer, they both share that.
That's what makes a serial killer like those people. That's what makes them fascinating to me, just like as a study on humanity, because it's so beyond anything that I can conceptualize as a person who's like very honest and open. And I like to think nice. And genuine, you know, I can't imagine living a double life like that and being somebody who gets off on other people's pain.
I have a hard enough time with living a good life in one reality than living a double life in two different realities.
Yeah.
So Lisa from Eye for an Eye podcast says, is there any case that you will not cover either due to the gruesome nature or any other reason?
Yeah, I can answer that question. There is a case, and I think I actually talked about this on an episode, or at least I kind of like talked around it. There's a case that I'm really interested in, and I would love to find out more information about and tell you guys about. The problem is this case has a survivor, and this case is very horrendous. There were multiple people who were murdered in this person's family, and because there is a survivor and because this story is actually fairly recent, it's not a case I will touch. Yep. Unless literally this person, the survivor, were to reach out to us and say, hey, please cover our case. That's the only way that we would do it, because it's just too soon. There's a survivor whose life is shattered and in pieces. That's kind of like that entertainment realm of true crime, which is, of course,
yeah, the shock value.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't know. I think there are definitely cases that we avoid because we have sort of ethical quandaries about them. And we're just worried about how our podcast can affect, you know, families or survivors. We do consider those things when we talk about cases.
I think there's also cases that are equally bloody and horrifying, but there are issues with the family. Maybe it's a cold case and the family is still very much involved with the case and is talked about how they don't want the spotlight put on this case, or they maybe they have issues about people covering the case that in a way that they're not comfortable with, and for legal reasons or because we have empathy or, you know, we want to protect the survivors and the family, we don't do those cases.
Yeah. So there are cases where, like, you have to be very diplomatic and it's almost political. And those cases are, again, hard to cover because we want to cover cases in a way that is unbiased. And some families are very active in the way that their loved ones' cases are presented. That means that it's hard to present a case in a way that is unbiased. And so those are, again, cases that we tend to avoid. you know, I won't get into the specifics because obviously those are cases that we are avoiding for certain reasons. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are definitely cases where we've looked at them, we're interested in them, but we're like, just not the right case for us.
That's a really great question, though, Lisa. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and thank you, Lisa. And go check out Eye for an Eye.
She also asked her typical question that they always do on Eye for an Eye, which is there any case where the outcome surprised you?
Oh, man. A lot of them.
A lot of them. One of the ones that comes to mind immediately was La Kiva, where the outcome and the trial was a huge part of that episode. That was the meat and potatoes of the episode, and the trial went a way different direction than we thought it would. It's infuriating, and it'll probably anger you.
Yeah.
But go check that one out if you haven't listened to that one.
And of course, Broomstick Killer. It's another case that it should have ended a long time before it actually ended.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are definitely cases like that where you're like, oh, justice may or may not was actually served.
Another one that comes to mind is the original Texas Chainsaw Killer, because he technically never really served for the crime.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all we got. All right. Next one. Thank you, Lisa, for writing in. But next question comes from our friends from across the pond over in the UK, which is Lux and Meg from Killing It, the Crime Cast. And they ask us, how did you guys meet, fall in love, get married, all that romantic crap? Tell us everything.
Well, we already talked about how we met.
Yep.
And kind of, I guess, how we fell in love. How did we get married? Would you like to tell us how you proposed?
So we were dating since 2006. And about 5 years later, I finally, after a prolonged dating period, popped the question to you. And the way I did it was I had a lot of help from my friends and your mom, which we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up a huge scavenger hunt all around Arlington, Texas, and Fort Worth. Basically, I put a clue in all these meaningful places that meant something to us. And I sent you out and had you go and find all these different clues.
Yeah, so one clue was the park bench at UTA where we used to meet and like study and stuff before class. One of them was Prince Lebanese, if you mm-hmm. live in Arlington, really fantastic Lebanese restaurant, which we used to go to all the time. Was it the final one? Was that at the Kimball Art Museum?
A couple of them were in the art district there, and they were significant because that was some of our first like meaningful dates. Like one of the first times we held hands was underneath the trees at the Kimball Art Museum, and that's where the final clue was.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a homeless person had come up and taken the blindfold that you were supposed to put on, because the last clue was, hey, put this blindfold on and wait for your surprise. And there was no blindfold.
No. So I just closed my eyes.
Yeah.
But I was really confused as to what you were talking about.
Meanwhile, your mom, all of our friends were all huddled up in the lobby of the Kimball Art Museum looking at you through the windows like, she needs to put the blindfold on. Why isn't she putting the blindfold on? What is she doing? And then finally, you just turned around and closed your eyes and we're like,
no, I think somebody called me and they were like, why don't you have the blindfold on? And I was like, there isn't one.
Oh, okay. What are you talking about? I think one of us did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a whole thing. I had to arrange for the people at the Kimball Art Museum to allow for a special thing to happen, because when you opened your eyes, what did you find, Aaron?
Well, I saw you, which I was pretty all right about. I mean, that's cool. And you proposed.
Yep.
And I said yes, you know, and it was very nice. But then you were like, I'd like you to meet somebody.
Yeah.
And you turned and pointed to our friend who was holding a big black blanket. And I said, that's our friend Steven. I don't understand what you're talking about. And he said, what is Steven holding? And inside was a little tiny Shih Tzu puppy.
Yep.
6 weeks old. The tiniest, sweetest little thing in the whole universe. And I burst into tears. And it was the best moment of my life because I had been wanting a puppy so badly, and Shay kept telling me how we couldn't afford a puppy, we couldn't have a puppy, and we didn't have any dogs at that point.
No.
We had ferrets.
Yep.
But we didn't have any dogs, which is, I mean, you guys hear us talking about dogs all the time. They're our favorite.
He was the inaugural member of the Canine Crime Unit.
He was, and that puppy grew up to be our buddy Nelson.
Yep.
Our number one boy. He is 9 years old now.
Yep. There you go.
I mean, he's the tiniest little, like, he fit in the palm of your hand. He was so little. And yeah, that sealed the deal for sure. Because if I was iffy in the beginning, when you handed me a tiny puppy.
How could you say no, right?
It was impossible.
Yeah, plus he was so
cute.
You
really cheated.
I did. I used the Game Shark cheat codes to getting a yes on the engagement proposal.
You did. And Nelson has been with us ever since.
That's right. Well, this kind of goes into Lux and Meg's next question, which was tell us about your dogs. So do you have anything to say about Nelson and Brienne?
Well, they're both spoiled little brats.
They are.
Nelson has only known being spoiled since we've had him since he was so young. So he is very hoity-toity and he's very like standoffish when he wants to be. He can be very independent, but he can also be very
like, lovey.
So sweet. He gives you kisses on command.
Yep.
And he loves giving kisses.
They're both very smart.
Yeah. They both love to cuddle. They're both really smart. They both know their tricks really well.
Well, that's a thing. We took Nelson to dog school when he was really young, and he graduated
top
of his class. And he learned all kinds of tricks, like he can roll over, he can crawl, he can bark on command.
We should do some Patreon videos.
But we should.
The dog's trick.
I taught him this one thing where I shoot him with a handgun, and he falls down dead. And that's probably his finishing trick, his finale.
And then Bree Bree over here. So Bree Bree, she's 2 years old now, and we got her from a dog shelter in Fort Worth. She was about 8 months old at the time when we first got her. And so that was about a year and a half ago or so, around there. You know, she didn't grow up like Nelson in the lap of luxury. She probably was a stray.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't know what her life was like when she got us, but she's very grateful.
Yeah, she's very submissive at times. Like you can tell she really enjoys having a home and having us. She loves on us constantly. She's a cuddler.
Oh, this dog loves to cuddle more than any dog I've ever met. And I've never met a dog who loves a belly rub like Brienne.
Oh, it's all she wants in life. That and food.
And ball. Yeah. Fetch, belly rubs, food. That's all she wants in life.
Yeah, because she's also like a Tigger. She can jump up in the air and catch balls. We've taught her how to fetch, and she loves playing fetch. She can do that for hours.
Yeah. So she's our little rescue girl. Our home feels complete with her in it. We're really lucky to have both of them. We love dogs so much more than we can even communicate.
They're our children, basically.
Yeah, we really love them.
Well, last question from Lux and Meg was, Aaron, please tell us about being the bone lady and maybe throw in a couple of bone facts.
Tell us about being the bone lady. I guess my interest in bones, I guess it came up in like when I was an undergrad in school, being in biological anthropology classes and everything. So it probably started there. But I really didn't get too involved until I went to grad school. So I took human osteology. I took zooarchaeology, which basically zooarchaeology is how archaeological populations relate to animals. So both domestic and wild animals. And there's a lot of information that you can kind of glean from how people interacted with animals, either for food or for secondary products and stuff like that. It's a really fascinating field of study. And then I took bioarchaeology, which is essentially...
That's a whole bag of worms.
Like, how do I describe it? Bioarchaeology is basically studying human remains in archaeological settings. And so I did all of that in my grad school. I also went to Poland. I did a field school in a 17th century Christian cemetery. And so I have excavated 2.5 human beings in my life. So when I talk about like doing actual excavation, I do have experience excavating human remains and also following them in the lab and then doing like fragment analysis and all of the things that I've talked about in my previous episodes, especially the unknown victim from Yellow House Canyon. That episode is very much just things that I've learned in all of my anthropological training and then in my actual studies that I did sort of in archaeological settings as well.
Yeah. You were also a TA in the bone lab at UTA as well. So you helped out undergrad students to begin learning about biological anthropology and just like, what is a skull and like, what are the features of a skull and how can you tell them apart and that kind of stuff.
That's right. I was mean too.
Yeah, you were.
I was a mean TA.
You come home and talk about all these kids, these students. They're terrible.
Yeah, I guess that's the basics of it. So I, you know, it's been a couple years now since I've been out of grad school, and that's why I try to keep up with it. It's hard to do when everything else is on my plate, but I try to, you know, keep up with my readings. And one of the reasons why I do go out and do animal remain collection and processing is because it helps me stay on top of my identification and also things like sort of identifying pathology, trauma, that kind of thing. It goes along with hand in hand with that. And also compiling a collection of like small mammal remains, that kind of thing can be really useful when it comes to archaeology or zooarch or bioarch or any of those subfields of anthropology. So that's kind of why I try to continue those studies.
It also helps that you have a very good supportive husband that puts up with you macerating remains on the back patio of our house.
You know what? Since we started this podcast, I have not had time to go out and do anything. So
maybe that's why I keep doing it. But you do have a great bone collection cabinet that we've put together. And I think that's another thing we might be able to bring to a Patreon episode or a live chat is to show off your bone cabinet with all of your collection.
I think we can do that. That'd be cool. Okay, so she wanted me to do a couple of bone facts.
What are your favorite bones?
My favorite bone is the sphenoid, which is the bone. It's kind of like the centralized portion of the face. It's called the butterfly bone, and that's because it has these wings on it, and then it also has these two little processes that drop down on the bottom that kind of look like legs. It's a really interesting looking bone, and it's something that's almost kind of completely hidden because it's encircled in other bones of the face and of the skull.
I actually bought you a really cool necklace of the sphenoid.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely nobody knows what it is. But you wear it
all the time, and I know what it is.
It's my favorite necklace.
Yeah.
And as far as a couple of bone facts, I'll just give you one. And that is, Shay, I think you probably know the answer to this. So
let me see.
So what animals do you think have similar dentition as far as molars are concerned as humans?
I would just evolutionarily guess great apes, but I think that would be wrong.
Yes. So like what other animals that you're going to find in North America, for example?
Oh, a horse? That would be my guess.
No, okay. Not even a little bit.
I don't know.
So humans, what kind of foods do humans eat?
Oh, well, we're omnivores, so we eat kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So we're omnivores. We eat everything. We don't have dentition that is specialized for any one thing. Mm. So we have a lot of animals out there that have teeth that are specialized in eating a certain type of food. For example, cats have teeth that are very specialized towards eating meat and tearing flesh. And that goes for big cats like tigers and lions in the wild and in domestic house cats as well.
Could it possibly be raccoons since they're omnivores?
It's not raccoons.
Ah, dang.
But what it is actually are pigs. And bears.
Oh, okay.
Pigs and bears, as far as molars are concerned. Now, when we're talking about like canines or any of those crazy teeth,
those are specialized teeth.
Those are specialized teeth. But we're talking about molars, which are the teeth that we do a lot of our grinding and chewing and all of that kind of processing of food. Our teeth are very similar to both bears and pigs. So much so that a lot of times pig teeth can be confused for human teeth in archaeological settings.
I've heard that, yeah.
So yeah, actually my first archaeological dig that I went to, which was up in the panhandle of Texas, somebody actually found a pig tooth.
That's crazy.
And we kind of had to shut down the site for a few minutes and really take a look at it to figure out whether or not that was a pig tooth, which is a green light, or a human tooth, which is a red light.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people might not know this, and it might seem counterintuitive, but typically, at least in the United States and at least in Texas, we don't want to find human remains unless you have already gotten all of your paperwork in order and done all that good stuff and you know that you're going to find archaeological remains. For example, if you know you're going to be digging in a cemetery and you have all of the green light on that already, if you just sort of randomly find human remains in a site, not a good thing, because you have to then shut down the site. You have to figure out what you're going to do with those remains. If it's Native American in origin, you have to start figuring out repatriation, et cetera, et cetera. So we did shut down the site just for a few minutes to try to figure out what that tooth was. Thankfully, there was a biological anthropologist there at the site who did identify it as a pig.
Yeah, lucky for you guys.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to continue doing archaeology, and that would suck.
Exactly. So teeth, molars, humans, bears, pigs, all very, very similar. Obviously, bears are going to be a lot bigger, so they're not confused as easily with human teeth as pigs are.
Well, thank you for that, Aaron. And thank you, Lux and Meg, for giving us those great questions.
Well, that's pretty much everything for the questions for today. We really want to take a second to just say thank you to everyone for listening. All of our fellow true crime podcasts for making a pretty cool community that we are super, super happy to be a part of. We love everyone. Thank you so much to everybody for contributing to our anniversary episode. All of our fellow true crime podcasters and all of our listeners, we love you guys so much.
Yes.
And next up is going to be our blooper reel. We hope you like it. We love it. We're really excited about it. We're going to be cutting a little bit out of it because it's so long. It's like the biggest blooper reel you've ever heard. So we will be playing the entirety of that blooper reel on our Patreon episode for this month, which is going to be coming out in about a week or so. I don't think we ever thought we would be this successful in our first years of podcasting, and we're really excited to be here. And we're just hoping to do bigger and better things next year, and hopefully you guys will stick with us. Be sure to go ahead and subscribe to our podcast wherever you like to listen to podcasts. That way, whenever we do come back from the break, you'll know immediately when our next episode drops.
Yeah, obviously the true crime community has really helped us out a lot. We've had a lot of really great help from other awesome podcasts that we consider our pod fam for life, and made some really great relationships. Got some meetups coming up with some of those people. Like at the end of March, we're going to meet up with the rest of the Texas Podcasting Union over in Fort Worth. That we'll put some more stuff out about that. And then next year in Chicago, we're going to go to the True Crime Podcasting Festival, and we're going to be promoting the hell out of that next year because that's going to be amazing. We're going to be there with some of the biggest podcasts in the true crime genre, and it's going to be really cool. You should come check that out. But you little guys, you listeners, everyone who's loved the show and said something to us on Facebook and social media, you really keep us going. We really appreciate everyone who loves the show and keeps listening and talking about it to their friends and spreading the word about All Crime, No Cattle. You are the lifeblood of the show. Thank you so much. Love you guys. And here's the blooper reel.
Greetings from Texas and welcome to All Crime, No Cattle. All right, let me try it again. All right, well, let's begin.
I have nothing else to add. Thought you were just going to take it away.
Okay.
Do you want me to give you a signal? Like, take it away, Aaron.
No, it's fine.
Let's get this chuck wagon on the road.
Gross. Not everything has to be like an Old West reference, Shay.
I think it does.
Okay. All right, now we got to get serious. So this case begins with a car accident in the early morning of a Tyler neighborhood and the early... Sorry, I say early morning twice.
Is it the early morning of the early morning? That's real early.
All Crime, No Cattle proves that with the massive size of the state of Texas, the dense... All Crime, No Paddle...
No paddle.
We're on Instagram at All Crime, No...
Stop slapping your ears. And they're trying to go up to the observation deck. The observation deck. They're trying to go up.
Look, okay. There's a dick.
Oh, God. That needs to go on the blooper reel. That is definitely going on the blooper reel. Well. Train.
Train.
Why don't you take a ride on the bone train?
Bone train.
Bone train.
And for our promo this week, we are for our promo this week, it is going to be our promo this week.
What was the word
you couldn't say? It's too late.
What was the word you couldn't say? The other one that you did it. You did it like 14 times.
I don't remember. We don't need to talk about it. It's deleted and gone. Hopefully.
Oh, it's in the blooper reel.
No.
Oh, God. You're so red right now.
Don't. You better cut that out.
It's in the blooper reel. It's already in the blooper reel.
Fuck you. No. Okay. Calm down, guys.
Who are you talking to? It's just us. Are you talking to the true crime posse?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Somebody farted. It smells like poop.
Wasn't me.
It smells like poop. Oh, God. So what I'm saying.
Polish that turd.
Turd?
And then it sparkles.
We're cutting all of that. We're not talking about polishing turds on the podcast.
I rub you on my skin. On my ashy skin.
God. Can I continue with the review?
Absolutely. Is that good so far?
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like I have such mush mouth.
Ooh.
Sorry, that was my tummy.
That's a weird throat.
Sorry,
voice.
My stomach is like full of beans and tacos right now. Not a great situation.
That's going on the blooper reel.
Mark it.
She had a thought that popped in her head that she needed to go check on her daughter. She had to go to her 12. She had to go to her 12.
Well, this story comes from us. Nope. Well, this. Not even a sentence in. Their pictures were plastered.
Plastered?
Plastered.
Alexa Sweeney. Wait, no. Alexa Sheweeny? Shewey.
Sheween.
Alexa Sheweeny. No, there's, I added an N. Sheweeny. Wait, Sheweeny? Shewey. Shewey, that's
sure
it.
She loves this, yeah. By the way.
Alexa Shewey.
So if you want to go eat a bunch of Taco Bell, go visit. Take a huge Taco Bell on Kenneth Allen McDuff's grave. You can apparently do that.
Find
and
out.
We can take pictures and send them to us. If you do want to do that, that is totally all crime, no cattle approved. And we will send you, what do you want? You want stickers? You want a shirt? You'll get it.
Yeah, I want pictures of poops on his grave. Yep. Anyways, about his grave, though, do that at your own discretion because...
Don't tell him we sent you.
Yeah, Huntsville authorities might not enjoy people dropping deuces on their cemetery. But
he deserves it so much, though. Both had short brown hair with short kind of wispy bangs. They both had similar skin tone and build, similar facial features. They both had a similar skin tone.
Just take a second.
And if you would also like to follow us on social media, we're on Instagram at All Crime No Cattle, and we are on Twitter at ACNC Podcast, and we are always putting out some sweet teeth. Not sweet teats.
Sweet teats.
You will find no sweet teats on our Twitter page.
Our Twitters? Our titters? Her twatters.
Oh my gosh, no. Sweet tweets. So what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ryan Moran says, I just found this podcast and really love it. Heart, heart, heart. We love you, Ryan.
We do love you.
Vicky Bates said.
That was weird. Hold on. Let me say that again. What? We send hearts to you, my friend. I said, we do love you. I said it real creepy.
That made technology consultants like himself, Section 1706 of the federal. That's my tax code. Oh, federal. fearing Stack may have set bombs to go off at the airport or in his car, which was parked in the airport's...
Airport.
Authorities were dispatched to the airport to investigate, fearing Stack may have set bombs off.
Did you say divestigate? I mean, I did the same thing when we watched the Unabomber. The Unabomber?
The Unaboner?
Kakaha Bobzilla on base. Kakaha? Yeah, Kakaha. K-A-K-A-H-A. How would you say that?
Kakaha?
That's what I said, isn't it?
What, you said Kakaha? Did you just
okay, all right, do it all right, with all right,
confidence?
All right. Because he found semen and blood inside a vaginal vault. I didn't know that was a term, but that's the way Dr. Bucks describes it. And that's what I'm going to put in the episode here. So there you go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I just want you to know I'm not saying the term vaginal vault. Someone else is.
Does that term make you uncomfortable?
Yes.
He kept his head down, and that, combined with the sunglasses and cowboy hat, meant that he was hard for bank employees to describe. And it meant that the surveillance cameras
Slow down. You're going over the speed limit.
And that the surveillance cameras really didn't get a good shot of him.
Nope.
I did it that time.
Nope.
God, I hate my life.
Okay. You slow it down. You don't have to go get. Like, just enunciate it. Get a
all right,
good.
All right. Hold on. Now I'm going to keep. Now I feel like the pressure on me. I hate this. Why do we do this? Okay. Meant that it was hard for bank employees to describe. Okay. He kept his head down and that combined with the sunglasses and cowboy hat meant that he was hard for bank employees to describe. And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't get a good shot of him. Get a good shot of him Good to get. I did not.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Just do the last part.
And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't go to... Man, oh my God, baby, what is going on?
Get a good look at
Get him. A good lo- shot of him. Get a good shot of him. Get a good shot of him. Okay.
Oh my God. Are you drunk?
No, I'm not drunk. Okay. And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't get a good shot. And it meant that surveillance cameras.
Just slow. Why do you have to do it? Get. You got to do it. Do you really have to machine gun that part of the sentence?
Jeez. Oh, my God. Okay. Shh. Let me just do this. Okay. Stop distracting me.
Oh, yeah. Stupid.
It's not making me laugh or I'm never gonna get it out. Okay.
I'm trying not to laugh. I'm not looking at you.
Oh my God. So they're laughing. Are we being poisoned right now or are we being gassed? God. We can't stop laughing. I'm seeing stars. And it meant that surveillance... I can't do it. We can't put an episode out this week. I can't do it.
Just saying. Couldn't get a good look.
Okay. Shh. And it meant...
Stop laughing. Why are you still laughing?
Oh my God, this is like in those news bloopers where they start laughing and then they're trying to like talk about some horrible like murder spree and they're giggling the whole time.
Yep.
And it meant that the surveillance cameras really didn't go to And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't go to...
Why are you starting with good first?
Really didn't get a good shot of him.
Get comes first.
And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't get a good shot of him. That might be the best that we can get.
So slow. Really didn't get
I can't a breathe. Good okay.
look at him.
And it meant that surveillance cameras really didn't get a good shot of him.
Yay.
I think I did it. Damn it. Okay. We can move on.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to All Crime, No Cattle. This is the Texas True Crime Podcast, hosted by your two favorites, me, Shay, and across from me, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Oh, what a dad joke.
I didn't even mean, I honestly wasn't even setting out to make that joke. I just said hi, Aaron, because I'm a moron. Damn it, can we please change? Let's just start over. The note read, "This is a bank robbery. Give me your money. No marked bills or dye packs." The teller handed the man all the cash in her drawer.
Drawer?
The drawer. Okay. Just make sure I can actually read it. God.
Hello, blooper reel.
And he confirms that he did indeed own a browned. He didn't. And he.
A browned.
On a skillet. They browned it. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. A browned Grand Prix.
Okay.
And, you know, you can't go back in time and put the.
I know. Gosh, that's frustrating. What's
the term? Put the back in the bottle?
Put the baby in the bottle?
It's not the baby in the bottle.
Ship? Ship in a bottle?
No, there's... Never mind.
We'll throw the baby in the bathwater?
No, it's not a baby. There's no baby. You can't put the cat back in the bag.
Oh. Well, that's your fault.
No, you that's said not a thing. That's a the cat's out of the bag. That's a
yeah,
completely
you can't
different...
put the cat back in the bag. Is isn't, that right? Isn't that another...
I don't know. I'm reaching for the wrong metaphor. Okay. That's all going on the blooper reel, though. Okay. Along the way, Willis Newton falls in love with a widow named Lewis Brown.
She... Wait, Lewis?
Okay, calm down a second. I wish that more was known about Louise and her son.
Louise.
I wish that more was...
It's my middle name. You should know how to say it, Jay.
Hold on. I wish that more was known about Louise.
No, it's not a Mexican Louise. What are you talking about?
I can't say it.
Louise.
All right. Okay. Come. Stop. You're stressing me out. The cash would be sorted.
Sorted.
And the Newton gang in contact with a corrupt postal inspector.
Sorry.
You can't yawn during the podcast. We've talked about this before.
Sorry. It just came over me. It's no mark against you. I'm very interested. That same year, the city of Arlington, in conjunction with the Texas Attorney General's office, filed a nuisance lawsuit.
A nuisance lozenge? Is that what you said?
Let me finish this line. He said that if a movie was playing in Miami, a person from Cuba could fly to Miami, watch that movie, and then return home to Cuba.
He almost called it Cuba.
Cuba. Like Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh,